Lunar Pages is a place you need to go for internet hosting, business hosting. Even if you're just kind of an average Joe and you want a website, a WordPress or something like that, you want it hosted, man, they can do it for as little as just a few dollars a month, and then you're all set. But for a business, large or small in between, it's reliable, scalable web hosting from Lunar Pages. They have hosting packages with all the tools and scripts and support you need to run an efficient, secure business website. And they have this thing called Secure Live. It's their patented website hack protection. It's a service that continually monitors your servers and stops hackers before they get in. That is something else. And they've got all the dedicated IP, SSL certificates, secure site transactions, all of that. And the best thing about Lunar Pages, this is what I like the most. When you pick up the phone and call them, it's somebody right here in the United States. Look for their button on our sponsor page. Click on it. You'll receive deep discounts exclusive to listeners of this program. And plus, if you're not satisfied, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee from Lunar Pages. All right, welcome back to the show. I'm Phil, and Dale Lopes is here. Skylar Charisma is here.
Hi.
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 It's the 100-year anniversary of the National Park System here in the United States, so it makes sense we would talk about camping out in those parks. So joining us now is the author of the book, Under the Stars, How America Fell in Love with Camping, camping enthusiast Dan White. Hello.
Hello. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. This summer marks the 100-year anniversary of the National Park Service. That's got to be exciting for you.
Very exciting, 58 national parks to choose from. I love the national parks. I think there's America's temples. I love the fact that we have a national pride in our wild places, and a lot of countries can't say that. A lot of places are totally built out with the wherewithal to preserve these places for other generations. And there was a time in American history when European countries were trashing us a little bit because we didn't have as much high culture as they did. But what we did was protect these places that were our outdoor museums, our outdoor temples. And we have some sites and places here that can rival anything on the earth. There's no other place quite like El Capitan. There's no other place quite like the Hoh Rainforest and the Olympic National Park. And there's just such an amazing variety of high desert, parks near the ocean, mountainous terrain to choose from. It would take a lifetime to really explore all these places.
Now, when something is designated as a national park, when a whole range of land is designated as such, what exactly does that mean for the camping enthusiast?
Well, what it means is you're going to have, I mean, what I find is that very often there's a little corridor where you've got a concentration of visits. Right? So places like Yosemite, for instance, where you even have a tram and there's a lot of kind of infrastructure and services there. But a place like Yosemite, the amazing thing is if you take a little bit of effort, just about any national park out there, a little bit of effort off the beaten track and away from the crowds, and you can sometimes have a place all to yourself. I hiked through a big old chunk of Yosemite National Park when I did the Pacific Crest Trail some years ago, and there are sections of it, just the most amazing glaciated, steep country, in which I didn't see a soul for a long while. National parks, I think, are your chance to get truly away.
Camping means different things to different people. It could mean just completely roughing it, but it also could mean bringing all the comforts of home with you. What's your definition of camping?
Well, you know, it's gotten a bit looser since I've tried so many different kinds, but really it's just going out with your tent and being surrounded by nature, or maybe just your sleeping bag, being out in nature and, you know, sleeping rough and being reasonably away from civilization. Having said that, and it should be this something that's removed from your usual circumstances. Having said that, I've camped out in people's backyards and had a wild experience. I've woken up with skunks crawling around and hawks flying over my head. I've gone glamping where I went in a tent that was bigger than my whole house with running water and, you know, in the bathroom. And I had a scene in Under the Stars where I was trying to emulate a survivalist from the 19th century by going out there and camping completely naked, you know, with nothing, just going out there naked and seeing what that would be like.
That's okay in some national parks, or are they going to hunt you down and take you away?
I did that in a state park, actually, a state park. I can't imagine getting away with that in a national park. It'd probably put me in jail. But if people ever would want to try naked camping, which I don't really recommend because it was quite harrowing, getting permission is difficult because there are, well, nudity laws, but also other laws governing, you know, the kinds of things you'll be doing on the land. So for me, just getting approvals to do that camp out because I didn't want to do it illegally. I didn't want to trespass or anything like that. That was the hardest part, was the level of bureaucracy I had to contend with just to do that hike. It seemed so simple, and yet it was so complicated.
I did a fair amount of camping with a tent or with a camper in the 60s to, I don't know, maybe the mid to late 70s. Is camping still safe? Aren't there a lot of nutcases running around these days?
I was just thinking about that in relation to how, you know, dangerous America can sometimes be. But I just feel like nutcases are often just sort of opportunistic and lazy when they get you. I feel like if you're going to go out there and make an effort to schlep yourself out there somewhere on some mountain pass, you'd have to be an enterprising nutcase to go out there and want to get somebody. There are not many people out there, not worth their effort. I think people are really as scared, as freaked out as people can sometimes be in the woods. I think they're much, much safer out there than they are out, you know, just in the normal circumstances of their lives.
I don't remember doing a lot of preparation or thinking much about making sure that the bears can't smell my food.
Well, these days, the game changer, and this is after I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, is you get this big old thing called a bear keg. Have you had to deal with that yet? It's like a big plastic semi-cylindrical thing where you stuff all your food in there. I used to try to hang my food from trees so the bears wouldn't get it, and now you have to bring this big plastic thing. In fact, there are some parks where it's required, and the hard part is sticking that thing in your backpack, and it adds a few pounds of weight.
Yeah.
You can sit on it. It's like a nice bench, you know.
Right, but you can't just leave your open bag of potato chips in the back of your car anymore, can you?
Oh, that'll be nuts. I was at Mammoth Lakes once and just at a hotel for an assignment out there that I was doing, and over the concierge's desk, there was a photo of what happened to someone who left food in the car in the parking lot of a hotel near this wild area, and it looked like someone had put the upholstery of that car through a food processor. I mean, bears will bust the windows, they'll look at a cooler, and they'll know enough to break in, even if they can't smell it, and they will rip your car to shreds. So I take a lot of precautions.
Have you had any touch-and-go moments with animals?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. The biggest touch-and-go moment I had with animals was actually another part of this book. My wife and my kid and I went to Mineral King, which is in Sequoia National Park. You have to get up this big, long, torturous road to get there, so you're pretty much stuck when you get there. But when you get there, they have these voracious creatures called yellow-bellied marmots, and they will attack. They will aggressively jump up into the chassis of your car, and they'll bite through the wires, and they'll try to drink the coolant in your car. Like, they'll know by sight, okay, there's some delicious coolant, and they'll drink the poisonous coolant in the car, and for some reason, it doesn't kill them. And so my wife and I were feeling pretty nervous about that, and we just parked it up at Mineral King, and sure enough, a few minutes later, a big fat marmot comes running out of the woods, waddling, jumps into the car. We're all shaking the car, trying to get it loose, and it finally let go, and it didn't seem to damage anything, but it's for real. I mean, if you got creatures that are going to just jump up and eat your car, you gotta watch out.
Yeah, I can see everybody running to their phones or their computers to Google yellow-bellied marmot. How about things going south for you, just generally speaking, when you've gone out and you thought you had everything planned and you started your camping trip and it just didn't go so well?
It's funny that you mention that because it seems, and maybe it's me personally, the kind of energy that I create, but chaos seems to sort of surround me every time I go camping. I think it does to everybody to some degree, but I mean, sometimes it happens even before the camp out. When I went out to the Adirondacks to camp, I was trying to get out from the Montreal airport, and I realized I didn't have a valid driver's license. I was able to talk my way out of that. Or I've had situations where, like, when I was trying to indoctrinate my wife, back when she was my girlfriend, into the value of camping, I went out there to the Big Sur area and ran out of water, and I tried to cook our food in a fondue maker, which didn't really get the water boiling. And I've just had all kinds of stuff just go south, you know, run out of food, or the food's disgusting, or, you know, you see bears and you're trying to hang your food. The most recent example is I was in Big Sur again with my family, and I tarped off the tent on the bottom, so the whole thing completely flooded out. I think the best thing is to kind of learn to roll with the punches and have a sense of humor about it, because if not, camping, it would seem torturous, because you just got to expect the unexpected, I think.
Right. Well, now that you've whetted everybody's interest in camping and putting their lives on the line, so for those who haven't yet gone camping, bottom line it for us. What do we pack? What do we absolutely need on our persons or in our car before we enter a national park? What can we expect?
Well, I really think that, like, for one thing, if you're camping with kids, you want to bring the comforts of home for the first one. But I like to have, I think there's some things you shouldn't skimp on in terms of the quality. I mean, as far as your basic layers of clothing, like your synthetics and things, you can get a lot of that stuff at, you know, Salvation Army and such. But you don't want to skimp on the quality of your tent. You want to get a really good waterproof, you know, reasonably waterproof tent. You don't want to skimp on your rain gear. You really don't want to skimp on your backpack. Those are the big ones, you know. And food is a variable thing. Some people don't even bring stoves. I always like to have like a quick boil stove with me. If I'm doing car camping, it's not a survival thing, but if I'm car camping with my kid, I always want to bring those ritualistic things that they look forward to. Like you want to bring your s'mores fixings. You know, that's really the way to indoctrinate the kids. You know, if I'm out there by myself, I can get by with very, very little. But if I've got other people there, I don't want to create a survival experience with them. I want to combine this, you know, nature, but not make it arduous. I feel like for some reason with the camping trips, especially if you're going out there for the first time with someone, the thing that they're going to always remember and talk about is the food. Like if you show them a waterfall, show them a beautiful lake and take them fishing or whatever, they're going to kind of forget about that if you give them something that's just a pretty gross food. Yeah. So I really try to not skimp on the food for the campouts if I'm camping with other people. If I'm out there by myself, I can do the mountain house or whatever. It's fine.
No catching or gathering?
Oh, you know, I try to be pretty minimal impact. The one time where I was kind of assembling stuff and kind of using the land was when I was camping totally naked for the book, where I had to, you know, gather a brush pile to stay warm and kind of sleep inside the brush pile. But normally speaking, I try to be as leave no trace as possible within reason. Of course, if we're to leave no trace at all, we would stay home. We would just not go because, of course, you figure using gasoline and having some impact. But I try to be respectful also of other campers. If I'm out there, I try to keep the noise level down after a while. I try to go out, if I'm car camping, say the hello to everybody, kind of help facilitate a community and kind of, you know, be part of the camping experience for other people.
Pitch a tent or sit out under the stars and read Under the Stars, How America Fell in Love with Camping. The book's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. The author is Dan White. Happy camping to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew.
All right, so you win a contest at work, and you feel pretty good about it because you've been acknowledged for your hard work and your ingenuity and all that sort of thing. But there are times when you wish you hadn't have been recognized for things on the job, and Skyler's going to tell us about that in a moment. But first, I want to tell you about Heat and Cool. Heat and Cool specializes in the best, most efficient air conditioning, heating, and ventilation systems in the world, and air conditioning. Think about it. It's starting to heat up, isn't it? It's already sweaty, depending on where you are in the country. It's sweaty time. And people come into your house, and you might be nose blind to just how bad it smells because of all the sweat dripping off your fat ass and onto the floor. And getting into the rugs and the couch and all of that is just starting to smell like a men's basketball gym, right? But it's your house. It's supposed to be nice and cool and refreshing. Come on. We live in the 21st century now, and you can afford air conditioning. In fact, you not only can afford it, it's way affordable at Heat and Cool. Their prices are so good, they guarantee that they will beat a lower price on an identical in-stock item from another online authorized reseller, and then they'll beat it by an additional 3%. Some restrictions apply. Go check them out on our sponsor page. Just click on it and shop around, see what you find, and then you're be well on the way of making your house livable and less gym sock smelly, all right? You had no idea that the place was starting to stink up, did you? But we noticed the last time we came over. Oh, Manny the Movie Guy coming up in the next segment, by the way. Some pretty good movie choices this weekend, but you can never know for sure until we hear from Manny. Now, Skyler.
Yes?
Have you ever been recognized for your hard work and your diligence and all of that on the job?
I think so, yeah.
You get like a little certificate and maybe
not with a trophy or anything.
Maybe some free lunch or something like that.
But yeah, like a coffee or.
Yeah. And usually when you're recognized by your peers and by your boss, it's a happy occasion, isn't it?
It is. It is. But, you know, for a waitress in Indiana, it's a not so happy occasion.
What?
She's actually pretty upset because, you know, her managers held an awards ceremony for the 50 employees at Scotty's Brew House, where people won things like best bartender and best server, and she won best butt.
Best what?
Best butt.
Yeah.
So they called her on stage to give her the award and told her to turn around so people could take pictures of her award-winning butt.
Yeah.
And she was not happy. She said, I feel like I'm more than just a butt. I feel like I'm smart. I'm going to school.
I'm so glad you didn't say and stuff.
Oh my gosh, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The owners of Scotty's say the awards weren't their idea, and they were just something the managers did on their own.
The managers, see, she's got a point, really. I mean, that's not the kind of, in this day and age, you don't give away best butt unless you're working in a place where having a good butt is part of the
Hooters.
The job
Hooters, right.
Yeah. If you work at a restaurant and somebody gives the best breast award,
you're right.
Then you're the one that
they're gonna be proud.
Yeah. See, I paid a lot of money for these breasts.
Right. Well, so I guess no one's apologized her yet, and she's actually thinking of filing a complaint.
Maybe she should.
EEOC.
You know, every now and then on this program, I horrify myself at my lack of memory. It seems like 3 hours ago, I promised to bring a story to you about why and how Charlie Sheen wants to get into bed with you. And then now I'm horrified to find out that we are well past the point when I promised that that was going to happen. But I don't think it's too late. It's never too late to find out that Charlie Sheen wants to get into bed with you. Isn't that right, Skylar?
Right. I mean, that guy is all about safe sex these days. So much so that London-based sex toy maker Lilo has a new line of condoms, the Lilo Hex, and Charlie Sheen is the face of the brand.
His face is on the condom?
No, he's just like, he's representing, you know?
Oh, well, that'd be a wood kill, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I've not seen this condom. I don't know if it's on the wrapper or if it's on the condom itself, but
What's with the hex? Does it do voodoo on you, or is it hexagonal shaped?
It's a hexagon. The condom uses a hexagonal web of panels in its latex, allowing it to be thin but strong, as well as more pleasurable and less likely to slip than a typical condom. And apparently it works really well because Sheen says he's tried it out and he likes it. And, you know, I guess he's...
Well, you don't want to endorse something that you haven't used yourself.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, he mentioned when he was endorsing it or making the video, he said that condoms, you know, they're usually seen as basically no fun, and people assume nothing bad will happen to them if they don't use them. And he's like, I pretty much felt the same way. That's stuff for other people. But obviously his failure to use a condom resulted in dire consequences. So it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, it is a good
promoting
thing.
Promoting safe sex.
You want to know who the smartest guy on the planet is? I just found out. You know who
Charlie
it is?
Sheen?
No, it's Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson's contract for Batman. Remember when he was Batman? He played what did he play? The Penguin? The Joker. He was
the Joker
in Batman a long time ago. His contract gave him a percentage of all the sequels.
Wow.
Meaning Batman Returns, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin.
Brilliant.
So even though he wasn't in any of those Batman sequels, he's made more than $100 million from them.
Wow. Really?
Jack Nicholson, or his agent.
Great agent.
Smartest woman on the planet.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is a great negotiation right there. Yeah. Sheesh.
Yeah. And the studios wanted Jack Nicholson so badly to play the Joker that they said, okay, sure. Yeah. Well, this superhero stuff,
it's
short-lived. Short-lived. Oh, boy. Hey, big movies opening up this weekend. And so that means we absolutely must have Manny the Movie Guy on the program. And he joins us at the top of the next bite-sized chunk of this program, episode 277. Part 6 of 6 is next. Next! Next! I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.